Welcome to the Hot Chocolate Recruitment Podcast, the Hot Chocolate Recruitment Podcast.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the latest edition of the Hot Chocolate Recruitment Podcast, where we are interviewing ordinary people with extraordinary jobs. Today, I've got a very special guest, Mr. Paul Worsling, owner of Tackle World Cranbourne in Victoria, Australia. But more specifically, he is the host of the very popular TV show, iFish. Ladies and gentlemen, what follows is just a fantastic interview by Paul. He just kept on giving and giving and giving. I told him the only brief that I had for Paul was that I wasn't interested in the biggest fish he's ever caught, nor was I interested in the best place he's ever visited. What I was interested in was his story, how he came to be, what it's like to be a business owner, and some of the trials and tribulations that he's faced in bringing us iFish, the TV show. I think you're going to enjoy this podcast. I loved every second of it. For the record, Paul doesn't know me from bars of soap. I was a total stranger. I approached Paul and he just kept on giving and giving and giving. I will forever be in his debt. I had a fantastic time. Just to clarify, every interviewee that I speak to, I typically send them the interview questions to ensure that they know what's going to be asked and they can formulate a bit of an answer. In Paul's case, he insisted that he didn't want to see or hear the questions beforehand. So what you've got, the result is that his answers are just pure, raw honesty. We go pretty deep. What you'll find is that you'll know a lot more about Paul Worsling at the conclusion of this interview. Thanks again for listening, guys. I really appreciate it. I hope you enjoy this interview. I loved it. Over to you, Paul. Paul Worsling, thank you for spending some time with me on Hot Chocolate Recruitment's podcast. My mantra, I guess, is ordinary people with extraordinary jobs. But in your case, it's more of an extraordinary person with an extraordinary job. Thanks for
that. I actually reckon you summed it up right the first time. Very ordinary person, very incredible job.
Good on you. Look, can you just give us a bit of a snippet on 22-year-old, you've just taken ownership of a store. Fast forward to 2013. You're a presenter on Australia's favourite fishing show. What's the journey? How did you get there?
Yeah, I wish I could sum it up in a one-word answer because it would save people a lot of time and pain. But if I look back to when I was 22, I bought Tackle World Cran, which was then Cram and Bait and Tackle, and it settled on the 9th of the 9th, 96. And if you had told me then that I would be doing what I'm doing today, I would have told you you were an absolute imbecile, crazy and delusional. So things wander along and they tend to go down paths that you might not always expect. But back then, I suppose the simple dream was, and I remember saying to my wife, I don't want to just be someone who works in a bait and tackle store. And I imagined an American store with an old guy whittling a piece of wood on a rocking chair out the front and people come in and bother him occasionally and get them a bag of bait or sell them a lure. I just said, if we're going to do this, I want to take on the world and I want to be known as the best tackle shop in Australia and the world. And I know that sounds a bit silly, but I just wanted to make a difference. And with that came, I saw an interview to the media, and I literally thought to myself, everyone out there in the world has someone to endorse their business. Now, I can't afford a Michael Jordan. I can't afford a Tiger Woods for Nike. I can't afford to pay someone to tell the world that Cram and Bait and Tackle is a pretty cool place. So I want to go and become someone. I want to be out there in the world because I'll work for free. And it was that simple. I'd do everything for nothing because that's what I did. And I want to become someone in the fishing industry. So not only can I promote my own business, but I can also promote something that I love so much because they say sharing is caring. And I just love fishing so much that any time I see it bring someone joy, it makes me extremely happy.
You say you love fishing, and I really see that. But, you're a young fella. You're 22. You've just taken ownership of the store. I'm sure that people come in and you can talk to them for hours about Rapalas and hooks and sinkers and lines and lures. But as a business owner, there's other challenges, isn't there? Like there's HR, inventory, accounts. Did you have anyone sort of mentoring you in that space?
That's a really, really good question. And I can tell you now, I got thrown in the deep end and I had no idea. So when I was 22, and I look at people who are 22 now, and I think, man, I can't believe I took on what I did when I was you. And I don't mean that in a detrimental way whatsoever, but I just think, were you crazy, Paul, or what? I couldn't write a check. Like, I literally didn't know how to write a check because I'd never done it apart from a bit of economy at school, or economics, whatever you call it. I didn't know the difference between an invoice and a statement, and I was scared to wait till the end of the month to pay a bill because I thought, what if I don't pay my bill? They won't give me stock. There was all these things, and I literally learnt as I went, and I made a lot of mistakes. And I think the biggest problem people have, they don't learn because they don't want to make a mistake. And I have a simple philosophy that you can fall over as many times as you want. The only thing that separates you from everyone else, you've got to get up at least as many times as you trip over. And as long as you do that, you'll always succeed. And I look now at things that I did that were so dumb, but I learnt so much. If I hadn't made the mistake then, I'd be making it now. And the best way to learn is just to be thrown in there. I'll never forget someone said to me, you talk about mentors, I had a lot of mentors. And I believe if you find someone who's intelligent, you find someone who's good at what they do, you find someone who's switched on, stand as close as you can to them and just hope that some of it rubs off on you. And if you hang around with great people, you yourself will become great. If you hang around with no-hopers, you will become a no-hoper. And I really believe in that. So I stood close to these people. I listened and I learned as quick as I could. And one of them said, I had all this debt. I'm not embarrassed to say that my mum and dad put their house up as collateral so I could buy that business because the banks wouldn't lend me any money. I had nothing but an old car. He said, a scared gazelle runs fastest. And if you watch a gazelle getting chased by a cheetah, he runs quicker than any gazelle because he has
motivation.
And I was motivated because if I didn't succeed, my parents, who were immigrants, they came here in 56 from Holland with nothing, they would have lost their house, and I was never going to let that happen. So my mum is 72, my dad's 75. I love them more than anything on the planet, and to this day I still do everything I can for them because without the start they gave me, I would not be where I am today. And I think that's important too. Every time you go along in life, it's very hard to get anywhere by yourself, whether it's a friend, a stranger, your parents, your brother, your sister. You need support to do great things. And I've had a lot of support. I've had a lot of mentors. The other thing I don't mind saying too, a lot of my mentors were not happy with my success, and I'm devastated by the fact that I don't talk to them anymore. They wrote me off. And I think that's important. If you're in a position where you can help someone, it is your duty to help them, and the greatest compliment will be the day they become better at the task than what you were yourself, because then you've achieved something. And sadly in life, I've had a lot of people who were happy to help me until I got to a level where they were, and it's like, hang on a sec, I feel threatened. People should never do that. They should be proud as punch that they've taken someone to that next level.
I've got some questions later on that I will ask you about the downside, the ugly side of... Everyone's got a downside. Everyone's got an ugly side to their job, but what I'll move on with these questions first. Are you a fan of American Chopper on TV? Have you seen that show?
I wouldn't say I'm a fan, but I've definitely seen it, and I love the concept.
Look, the reason I raise it is I see parallels in American Chopper. So they've got Orange County Choppers, they make bikes, and then they got the TV show, American Choppers. And the TV show, they both supplement each other quite well. And I see parallels with that show to what you've got with your fishing stores and your show. Now, obviously, different products, et cetera, but there are a number of parallels that I see. Have you ever wondered if there was no iFish, if there's no TV, no radio, how your businesses, how your fishing stores would have gone?
Yeah, look, I think about it a lot, and it's the worst thing about that question is you can never, ever know what the answer to that question is. So, like advertising, people say 5% of advertising works, 95% doesn't, but no one knows which 5% does. And I know for a fact that television, radio, Facebook, Twitter has made my business a better business. I know that for a fact because I have people come to Cranbourne, which people might not know, but Cranbourne is a low socioeconomic area about 45 minutes southeast of Melbourne. I don't want to say it's got nothing going for it, but it's just a place to live. It ain't fancy. It ain't no Toorak or no great place in Sydney. So I've had people travel from all around the world, like I'm talking Ireland, America, all around the world to come to Cranbourne to see me and to see my store because they've heard about it. So that makes me very proud. Obviously, my business has grown a lot because of it, but I'm also a great believer in the fact that word of mouth is the best advertising you'll ever get. And I also believe that the hardest you need to work is when you don't think anyone's watching, because you work really hard, and a lot of kids, I think they need to understand this. It doesn't matter whether they're sweeping the floor, stacking shelves, cooking French fries. If you do it with pride and you do the best job you can every single time, eventually someone that matters is going to be watching, and that's going to be your step up to the next step in life. So I've always worked on that principle. And when I bought my business in 96, I wasn't on television, but I was committed and I worked on word of mouth, and I treated every customer then with total respect as I try to today. And that business, I think I doubled the turnover in the first 2 years. And that was without TV, without all that. Was just by people saying, hey, you've got to go check out this kid in Cram. There's something different happening there. So television is amazing. I can't tell you. I was in Los Angeles last week and someone stopped me in the street for photographs. Like, that's the power of television. And he actually lived at Calamarine. He's on holidays, and the same thing happened in San Francisco the week before. So you can't even imagine that power. But I still think television isn't the be-all and end-all. And I still think at the end of the day, the way you treat every single person that walks through the door and the respect you show them and the respect you show people in your life in general can be just as powerful a medium and long-term provide better results.
Look, I'll ask you a couple of questions. This is the last question I'll ask you from a fishing store owner perspective. You're a store manager. You've been at the coalface, like you said. You know, you're serving people, et cetera, et cetera. Is it hard, as a store manager, is it hard, someone coming in, they've got a brand new brand of sinkers, hooks, lures, whatever the case may be. They've got a head full of steam. You can see the enthusiasm dripping off when they come in. And you just think to yourself, as a store manager, look, I don't think I can move this product. Is it hard turning these people down?
That is one of the nightmares of business. And you summed it up, because everybody thinks they've got the greatest product on the planet. And I had a classic example recently, and I probably should name the product, but a guy emailed me and said, Paul, you have to fly to Sydney tomorrow. I've got the greatest idea that is going to revolutionise fishing. And I get an email like this every day. So I said, look, I can't fly to Sydney. I haven't got time, but can you give me an idea of what this idea is? No, it's confidential. I said, look, I'm not going to do the wrong thing by it, but I don't. Anyway, after to and fro, he told me the idea, and I've been selling that same product for 2 years.
Wow.
So it's very difficult because people live in their own world. They have their own idea. And he might have never seen that product, but I could have spent a whole day going to Sydney to tell the guy the same thing. So it's difficult. I think the important thing with that and anything in life, it's the way you tell people. And I've seen a lot of people over the years who I've employed say to someone, "And that's a dumb idea. Why would you do that? You're breaking someone's heart." You tell someone, and you know, it is a good idea because it is, but it doesn't suit the market. I think the $10 is too dear. If they were $5, we'd sell them. And you've got to send people away with a positive experience. Because if that's someone's baby, it's like someone as a child, and you go, oh, that's an ugly kid. It's just, why would you do that? It's just every child is beautiful. So I think it's just important, again, about showing people respect and explaining that it doesn't suit your business, doesn't suit your business model. And the sad thing is, most people will not hear that. They'll hear negative, 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 but I think you owe it to them and yourself to always be positive in the way you deliver that news, because at the end of the day, everyone's trying, he's trying to run his business, or she is, by selling your product. You're trying to run your business. As long as you give them that respect and tell them the truth, and I think you should be honest with people, then when they leave, whatever is the result from there, you've just got to go with it. But that is a tough situation. I've been there many, many times.
Fantastic, mate. All right, that's the fishing store bit. Now, I dare say a lot of people haven't heard those stories, so I really appreciate that. Mate, the TV show. Yeah, cool. Look, the TV show, everyone loves it. I love it. When I spoke to a couple of people and said, oh, look, I'm interviewing the iFish guy. Mate, they come out of the woodworks, my auntie, my uncle, mum and dad, my brother, all my friends and my best friend. Oh, ask him this, ask him that. So, look, I reckon a lot of people fall in love with you, Paul, because of your enthusiasm. You're very, you're up and go. What we see on TV, is that you? Is that Paul Worsling? Is that you, you know, without any bounds? Is it you 100%?
Well, I'm not a very good actor. but I've got to say yes, although it's funny because you never look at yourself. It's like, I've got to ask, what star sign are you?
Aquarius.
So do you feel like an Aquarius?
I don't even know what Aquarius means, mate.
And you know, and I'm a Scorpio, but you know, what does Paul Worsling feel like? Yeah, it's a bit of a weird, it's hard to get your head around, but all I can say is the one reason that I think I love what I do is because with iFish TV, what you see is what you get. There's no airs and graces. The only thing is, obviously, when I'm home with my mates, I might have a few bourbons or swear occasionally, which I can't do on television. That's just a fact. Everyone knows that's the way the life and the whole world works. But I'm a passionate person. I love fishing. I love my family and I love my friends. And I think on one of my Facebook pages, I actually say it's about the three S: family, fishing, and friends. So at the end of the day, what you see is what you get. I get terribly excited about fishing. I love it with a passion to the point where you could make a grown man cry. And the reason I love it so much is because I have had so many positive experiences through fishing. Like, I've built my life on it. My fishing tackle stores have paid off my house. They've put my kid through school. My best man at my wedding, Tony Knight, I met him when he came into my shop as a customer. And he had his little girl, Jamie, 2 years old. And they used to come in on a Saturday and she used to ring up stuff on the till. And I went, oh, she's 18 now. Like, it's all about those experiences. So for me, fishing is not just separating a fish from water. But back to your original question, 100%, because I don't look at myself as anything but Paul Worsling, husband, Paul Worsling, dad. And I want to be the best I can at those two things. And fishing is something I do and love. And the fact that people see what I do for a job, i.e. there's a camera there, that doesn't change the way I do it. And the one thing I always want to do is keep it real, because I think the day you go out fishing or anything you do and you try and be better than the average person, I reckon you've lost the plot. Because why would you want to try and be better than anyone? Why wouldn't you want to just have fun and enjoy it? Because at the end of the day, a lot of people are not happy. Life's tough. They've got a mortgage. Taxes are big. Some people actually live with someone they don't like, and that's a fact of life. I want to try and inspire people and just help them find, if it's 30 minutes of joy when they can turn off from the world, that makes me happy.
Mate, at what point, in terms of your life and your career, at what point did you think to yourself, this TV thing might take off? I'm really going to have a red hot go at this. How old were you? What sort of stage of life were you when the bell rang?
Oh, I'm 39 now, and I reckon it was last week. you know what? This is funny, but I did 4 years of Rex Hunt Fishing Adventures as co-host, and I've done 8 years of iFish TV. And I've got to say, I don't feel like I've made it. I don't feel like I've done what I need to do, and I don't feel like, I don't want to say a success, but I don't feel like I've nailed it yet. I reckon there's so much future. A lot of people aren't aware of this, but I did season one and two of iFish. And after season two, Channel 10 actually gave it the flick. And a lot of people, I guarantee they don't know this, but they said, look, we haven't got room on the network. It's good, but it isn't what you were doing, and thanks for everything. And in, I think it was 2007, we had a year off. And probably the most gratifying moment of my life in work was when I built iFish from the ground up again and got Series 3 back on television and flew to Sydney, visited Foxtel, visited Channel 10, and physically built it, started from scratch. And Series 3 to me is a bit like Series 1, because that's when it became iFish with Tackle and Chains. And that to me was probably an incredible moment, because it had started again from nothing. It was a whole new concept, new show. And I just thought, man, if I can make this happen, I'm on my own, I've got to give this a red hot crack. And every year I've faced battles, and every year I've thought, how long is this going to last? And I'm in my eighth year of my own television show, and a decade in television is mind-blowing. But I think the thing that probably keeps it real is that I could do 20 years and I probably still wouldn't feel like I've actually made it. And I know that might sound weird, but I just don't see it that way. I just see every year as a challenge, and every year I just want to do something bigger and better than last year. And if I have a flaw, it's that I'm a perfectionist. And even when I do amazing things sometimes, and I'm very lucky because I'm put in situations where I can always see a way of doing it better. And I'm hoping that next season I'm going to do it better and I'm going to blow people away.
It's interesting you say that about season one, season two. Look, in preparation for this interview, I borrowed some or rewatched the season one. So I'm going through season one. What I did notice,
in terms of change between season one, season two, and season three is if you have a look at your photos that you've got now, you're catching fish and whatnot, you're plastered with sponsors and brands and whatnot. The very first episode in season one, you're out fishing for sambos, I think, out of Western Australia. And I found it very interesting that you were wearing a Billabong T-shirt. So my question is, when did the sponsors start calling?
I've got to say, I love your questions because you've done your research. That is gold. You've done very well. And I look back at some of the stuff I was wearing, and it's funny, but season one was an absolute nightmare. Like, we lost money because it cost us a fortune to fly around the country and film that stuff. Season two, we lost money. Season three...
Can I ask you a quick question? Season one, I'm watching the videos. I keep on calling them videos. I'm watching the DVDs, mate. Season one, you're fighting sambos. So you're fighting sambos. And then I think disc three, you've come back and you're fighting... You're out fishing for sambos again. Can I ask you this question? Can you let me in on the secret? Is the disc one and disc three or whatever it is, are they filmed on location sort of 2 days apart? Or did you fly in, catch fish, fly home, and then go back out to Western Australia for the second helping of Samson fish fishing?
What would you like me to tell you? Of course. Look, now I'm doing 50 episodes a year. It would be logistically impossible to fly to 50 locations, film for a day and fly home because I'd spend my whole life in the air. So what we do, we'll go to a location and we'll film two or three shows, maybe four, depending on how long we stay. And then what I will do is place those episodes over the period of time. So what I will say is, g'day, we're back in Western Australia, which is the truth, because we're back in Western Australia, but those shows are filmed in consecutive days. On rare occasions, if the weather gets us or I can't catch a fish, I will actually fly back months later and do it again.
But the magic generally, of television, hey?
It is the magic of television. And generally, it literally is about budget. If I've got to fly to the West and take a cameraman, if I can film two shows, let's say it cost me $30,000 to go to Western Australia with a crew. If I film two shows, it cost me $15,000 a show. If I film three, it cost me $10,000. If I film one, it costs me $30,000, and I start going back with big. Every day I stand on the water not catching fish, it's like throwing $100 bills in the wind every 10 minutes. Actually, probably every 2 minutes. So, yes, we try to cover as much ground as possible and keep costs low. But what we do, the Samson thing was unique because we give it two cracks in a row. But nowadays I might go, let's just say I go to Lakes Entrance, which I did a trip recently. So I did a day on the Mitchell River catching estuary perch. I did a day in the lakes catching brim. I did a day at Meetung flatted on soft plastics, and then I did a day at Marlow chasing marlin. So you've got four different people, four different boats, four different species, so it keeps it nice and interesting.
Four different episodes. That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, it's fascinating. And so the premise of season one and season two, can I ask you this? Was it a case of a producer saying, look, I've got a great idea. I'm going to create a fishing show. Who should I get? Oh, Paul Worsling. Let's get him up. What do you think? Or was it a case of you actually creating the show to supplement your business? How did it work?
We were down at Warneat filming one of the last segments ever for the Rex Hunt fishing show. And I said to my producer at the time, I believe we've got a formula here and we can make it a really incredible show. And at the time, no one really knew who I was or whatever, and I was just full of enthusiasm and excitement. We filmed the pilot, and the reason that the show became I Fish, which I think is a fascinating little aside, is in 1992, I went to university. I did 4 years of PE teaching, and at the time, I was a very passionate angler, and personalised number plates were big in Victoria, and I wanted a personalised number plate that summed up exactly how I feel. When I drove past someone, I wanted them to know that I fish because that tells you what I am. So I got a number, and I can only have six letters or six. So I had to get something in the six letters, and I fish came out of my mind. So I bought the number plate. I eventually kept that plate forever. And when we filmed the pilot, it was on my F-150, and they got a tight shot of this number plate disappearing from the building we'd been in. And my producer rang me and said, I've got a name for this show. And not a lot of people know, but iFish was nearly called All Fishermen Are Liars. Because at the end of the day, we are. We all stretch the truth. We all talk it up. Not because we're bad natured, because we're that excited. It might be a foot long, but it felt like it was 2 foot long. And the pilot was going to be called All Fishermen Alive. And when he saw my number plate pull out a screen, he goes, Paul, I've got the name for the show. It's I Fish. And I said to him, that don't ever work, because I'm fairly intelligent. And he said, no, it's brilliant. And that's how the show became called I Fish. We took that to the network, and we were on air within 2 weeks.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant, mate. One of the things I really like, there's two great things in life for a bloke, isn't there? There's one, getting a one wood and smashing a golf ball as far as you can. Secondly, it's catching a fish, fighting a fish. It's just you and the fish in battle. Now, I've watched some TV on the old Foxtel. Bass fishing, competition fishing in the US. Now, these blokes go out on their boats and they're catching bass. I see there's no chivalry in that, Paul. They go out, they get a bite, bang, they whip it up, they winch it in. Mate, the fish, before the fish knows it, it's out of the water,
gone.
The kill tank. Where's the chivalry? Where's the sport? Where's the enjoyment in that?
Yeah, I got to say, and people might not like me saying this, but I got to say, I don't like fishing competitions, and I don't enjoy it. To me, that's just, let's take something we love, let's complicate it as much as we can, and let's put some rules and prizes in so we can bring liars and cheats in to make everything we love as horrible as we can. And I'm not saying fishing competitions are all like that, but I've had some horrible experiences. We spoke about mentors earlier, and one of the people I admired most when I was a young boy took me under his wing and treated me like a father figure. I was in a fishing competition or club with him, and I won the Junior Angler of the Year, and when I was 15, I became the senior angler, and people said, oh, well, you're gone now, Paul, because you're up against all the blokes. And as it turned out, the first year I was a senior angler at 16, I actually beat my mentor, and I became the champion angler of the seniors, and he basically never spoke to me again because he couldn't handle the fact that this kid had outfished him, and he just couldn't live with it. And it gutted me because he's a bloke that I treated like a dad, and because I caught more fish than him, he didn't want to ever talk to me again to this day, never speaks to me. And because of those sort of experiences, and I've seen cheats, I don't want to be negative, but I just get no joy from that. I don't want to be told I have to be fishing by 7, I have to be off the water by 4. I don't have to lie to people I love or care about because I don't want them to catch as many fish as me, because then I'll look. So honestly, I have no interest in it whatsoever. I prefer to go fishing with my wife and my boy, go on the bay, catch nothing, but have a fantastic day with just the three of us, no disruptions from the world, because to me that is the ultimate day I'll ever spend.
Mate, I remember growing up as a young fella watching all the VHS fishing movies, and I used to go down to the old Video Easy, whatever it was back before that, and hiring fishing movies. Ron Calcutt, he was a bit of a favourite of mine. Growing up, I'm 34, you're 39. So what, like back in the day, back in VHS days, what was your hero? Did you ever look up to a person and think, oh, geez, I wish I was him. I wish I had my own TV show.
You say Ron Calcutt, and I can just, this will be really bad radio and audio, but it's like this. It goes, hi, I'm Ron Calcutt, and welcome to A Fisherman's World.
That's the one.
I used to watch those videos, VHSs, that were produced by a guy called Ozzie Emery from memory, and they went to Hat Head on one, and they spun for Spaniards. And in another one, they went and they caught...
Off the rocks? Is that off the rocks, Paul?
Yes, off the rocks. Yeah. And the second day, they had cheap insurance because they took an inflatable boat that Joe rowed back around the point with their big cobra and their Spaniard they'd caught. And when they cleaned them on a piece of wood, they had a bit of sunburn just to remind them they'd been in the great Aussie sun. And another one, they went out and they caught bronze whale sharks off the banks off Jarvis Bay. I watched that stuff 1,000 times over and over and over. And then it moved on to the later edition of VHS, one of the greatest fishing videos ever made, Going for Gold. John Bryant, Steve Starling, produced and filmed by Doug Fair, fishing for yellowfin tuna out of Bermagui in a competition. And Johnny Bryant, who's known as the Pilcher, caught this 100-kilo yellowfin. And when I met Johnny Bryant, when I was like 16, it was like meeting a god, because I met this dude. And if you ever go back, find Going for Gold, It is a classic, and it is such great television. I know the history behind it now, which is even better. And I know all those people because I've met them since. And then there was one on Lord Howe Island. I can't remember the name of the show, but Steve Starling, Ian Miller, Hal Harvey, and two other blokes went there, and Shane Mensforth. They caught kingfish. Hal Harvey, a great friend of mine, Shane Mensforth became a great friend of mine, and those guys, whether they knew it or not, they inspired me, and I just took every bit of that passion I could, and I remember word for word those DVDs. I remember watching them. Sorry, I should say VHSs.
Yeah.
And I watched them like at my tackle store when I worked there. I worked there since I was 14. I watched them over and over and over and over to the point I probably haven't seen them for 20 years, but I remember them word for word, and that was so inspirational. And I understand now that inspired me so much. And those guys, I've never really got the chance to tell them. I've told Johnny Bryant many times, but if I feel that I can give even 1% to people that those guys have given to me, then I'm in such a fortunate position. They inspired me just like you wouldn't believe. And obviously I've had other mentors and lots of heroes and people I looked up to, and I've been lucky enough to meet lots of them, to work with them. And I think I was in a fortunate position once where I believe I become my hero's hero. And I think there could be no greater moment in your life when that happens. And I don't think it happens often, but I think it happened to me, and I don't even need to tell you who it is, but that was probably an incredible moment for me when I realised that had taken place, and it made all the hard work I'd done very worthwhile.
That's brilliant. That's a great story. Thanks for sharing that. Alrighty. I'm going to ask you a couple of lighter questions, if I can. I'm sitting there watching the DVDs, and you're there catching fish and talking to the camera. What part of me feels sorry for the old cameraman? You're bouncing around the back of the boat, and there's a bit of a swell up. And do your cameramen ever get seasick?
Yes, and they spew their guts up. Look, they're pretty good, but I've had some shocking experiences where I've literally been rubbing their tummy, rubbing them on the back, helping them throw up, and then saying, just look, put it on your shoulder for 1 second and catch this. Generally, they're amazing, but I get seasick too, and I've had times when I've thrown my breakfast up, wiped my face, turned to camera and said, well, here we are in beautiful Cairns. I'm looking forward to today, and I'm going, oh, I think I'm going to die. That's just part of spending life in the wild environment. But look, but luckily, most of my cameramen are very good. They're professional, and I help them. I understand what it takes to not be seasick, so I help them with the breakfast they eat. I give them the right tablets, and when they're sick, I support them. Like, they're part of my crew. I look after them. I hold their camera on the way out for them to take the weight off because it weighs 13 kilos. But, yes, I think every member of our crew has had a spew at some stage, and a couple of times we've actually filmed it because I don't mind being embarrassed because that's the way life is, but yes, yes, and yes is the answer to that question.
Okay. All right. You've seen some stuff in your day. Now, I watched you fall out the boat, Western Australia's first season. Funniest thing you've ever seen in your TV career?
Ooh. Have you got an easier question? There's no way I can nail it without thinking about it or without prior notice. Funniest. Oh, there's literally a million things, and honestly, not one thing comes to mind that I could tell you that I could probably physically tell you. But every single day, we have moments where we are in stitches. Like, we laugh a lot, we hang it on each other a lot, and we have a lot of fun. Because I've got a saying: if it ain't fun, it ain't worth doing. And that's the philosophy I pretty much live life by. So, yeah, I'm thinking of something else I can't tell you, but and it's not bad, but we've had some funny things. Classic example, I might be doing a four-wheel driving tip on how not to get bogged on the beach. You know what? We get bogged. Look, it's just Murphy's Law. Classic case, I might be telling you how something works. I hit the button, it doesn't work. And little things like that just make us laugh and laugh. Like, it's just Murphy's Law. So, I don't reckon there's a day when we're not at the point where we're laughing that hard it hurts.
All right.
And I do hope to bring out a bloopers DVD one day when I can actually put it all to air. and hopefully it'll give people a little insight to the fact that we have a pretty good time.
Okay. Look, I would consider your job that you've got, I'm going to call it a job for now, is if I had a dream job, yours would be one of them. Okay, if I had three dream jobs, yours would be one of them. Now, if we take fishing away from you, what would be your dream job?
Well, all I can say is growing up, I wanted to be a vet,
mm-hmm.
and I wouldn't want to be now because I work too hard. But I think that's pretty cool being able to look after animals and deal with people who are going through a really tough time. Like I lost my dog last year and it broke my heart. So I think if you can be there for people at that time, that's pretty cool. Don't dislike me immensely. I never use the H word because I don't like it at all. But I always wanted to be a real estate agent growing up.
Right.
Because I just like the idea. I love real estate. It's a second passion of mine, and I love the idea of being able to find people both a bargain that they can make a quid on so they can enjoy their later years in life and also a beautiful home they can share with their family. But I just cannot imagine myself doing anything else. For people who drive every morning an hour to and from work, you could pay me $1 million a year, I wouldn't do it. I'd have to find something else. So the only job I could really think of, if I had to do, if fishing didn't exist, I'd kind of crawl in a hole and just disappear. But it would have to be something I could do when it suited me. And when I say that, I work 24 hours a day, so that's pretty easy. But that includes my family and gives me access to my family when I need it and my friends. Because I just reckon life is way too short. I've lost lots of great friends. I lost one recently, and it really annoys me when they go young. And I just think I don't want to be pigeonholed into a box where I have to do something when I could be doing something I love. So it has to be something I was pretty passionate about. And I don't think you can make money just loving your family. So I think fishing's the only thing for me.
Good on you. Okay. Look, I've got a couple of listener questions. What I'm going to do, I'm going to give you a couple of listener questions. We'll get through them. I've got some darker side that are some, I guess, more personal questions that I wanted to ask you. And then I've got a little game. I've got a little game at the end. It'll take 2 minutes and then you're away. So first listener question by Kurt Ledecky. He wanted to know, what sort of legacy would you like to be remembered for?
Great question, Kurt. Number one and most important, I would love to be remembered as the best dad on the planet because when you bring a child into this earth, it's the greatest feeling you'll ever have. And you said the dark questions are coming later, but they're coming now. Christy and I struggled to have a child. We did 4 years of IVF and we never thought we'd be lucky enough to have a boy or a girl. And when it finally happened, we just thought we were the luckiest people on the planet. So if in 100 years someone Googles my name and says, oh, this is Paul Worthing bloke, the one thing I'd love is for them to go, you know what, he was a great dad and he gave his boy every life experience possible and his boy was his best mate. And in saying that, you can't be a good dad, in my opinion, unless you're a good husband and you've got a great relationship with your wife. So just as important, my wife is my best friend. I want people to know that we just love each other, care for each other, and that as a family, even though it's tough at times, we have our moments, we're a great group and we love each other. And if we just spent time fishing together forever, we'd be happy as a pig in poo.
Cool. Second listener question. It's from there's three. Brett Monaghan, my brother Andrew Scotland, and my uncle Kevin Squires. They want to know what
Uncle Kevin.
Uncle Kev from Wollongong. Mate, what's
good
the
work.
Worst fishing injury you've seen? Now, can I share a yarn with you? Can I share one with you?
You can.
Back. Okay. So when I was a young bloke, 12, we're at a camp for school, and it was really cool. There was 15 young kids. Throwing lures out. We're all standing on what appeared to be one rock. 15, you know, we're all casting out and having a great time. And a young fella sort of walked up behind the group, and he didn't understand the ethics of fishing. You don't walk behind someone who's casting. And all I heard was a scream. I've looked back and here's this kid and he's got a lure stuck in his eyelid. It's missed his eyeball by what could have only been 2 mil. And I've looked and here's this kid and he's got a, I don't know, it could have been a Tassie Devil or something, stuck in his eyelid, had to go to hospital and, you know, had a bit of a puncture wound. That's my worst fishing injury. Paul, yours?
The worst I've ever seen was on the internet, which is where you see everything bad, and someone actually had a freshwater trout lure bedded in their eyeball, and that was just horrid. But the worst I've actually heard, I've ended in death, and a guy basically wanted to go and catch a marlin. He said, it's the last thing I do before I die is catch a marlin. I won't say where, when, or how, but the marlin come to the side of the boat. He was in the chair. They held the trace, cut it free, turned around to give him a high five, and he was dead in the chair.
Oh, a heart attack, was it?
Heart attack. He actually dropped dead after living his dream. So that's pretty full on. And I'd say that's probably the worst. Not that it was a fishing injury, but it happened on a boat. But any time you get a hook in you, it hurts, and I've had plenty.
Wow. All right. The darker side. This for me is really important because this probably tells me a bit more about you and the listeners to get to know you a bit better. I saw a clip of you. You did a clip a while back, and you voiced some opposition to recreational anglers being locked out of areas, and then the government has gone and you know they're thinking about buying a big super trawler, and you voiced it. You voice your concern around the hypocrisy of it. Since 1989, since you've taken ownership of the business in your career, things have changed in that time. What's changed the most in fishing, in the fishing landscape, for the worst, in your opinion?
I'd have to say you nailed it, the hypocrisy of government. And I don't like to get political because I've just got back from America, and in America everyone wears politics on their sleeve and they're proud to say they love Obama or they love the other side, whatever. In Australia, you're taught don't talk religion, politics or money. So no one really knows where you stand. And I don't like to talk politics, but when people went to war and docked war for this country and then they're trying to lock us out of areas where you want to take a child fishing to keep the brim and have a positive experience, it makes my blood boil. And if they were doing it for the right reasons, I'd be behind 100%. But they're only ever doing it for political gain, and that makes me feel ill. And I'm disgusted that we have governments, and I'm not going to name any government, that actually treat the people in this country with such contempt and treats us like idiots. It just makes me feel ill.
Good one. The downside to your job. Now, look, can I specify what your job is? You're a fishing store owner, multiple store owner, and you're also a presenter on iFish. So we'll just call that the job. What's the downside to your job? Everyone, look, I see you've got the perfect job, you've got the perfect life, you visit exotic locations, you're forever buzzing because you're pulling in record fish and whatnot, but there's got to be a downside, mate. What are those downsides?
The biggest negative is that I miss my family immensely. There's nothing worse than when you get home, you're home for 23 hours and you've got to fly away for another week and they're not coming with you. And I've spent many hours in hotel rooms lying there in the dark. I won't say I was in tears, but I might have been, just thinking, I miss Christy so much. I just want to be home. There's an incredible amount of pressure when you do what I do because everybody expects you to do everything for them. Like, you've got to speak up when there's a problem with government. You've got to speak up when there's a problem with this. They look at you as an ambassador and they think it's your deserved right that you must spend every spare second fighting their battle. And I'm happy to fight their battles if I believe in them, but sometimes you just haven't physically got time, and once I've done all the work, you want to spend that time with your family, not fighting someone else's battle. That's difficult. But probably the most difficult is physically just the time that it takes to be successful. And nobody ever got anywhere without hard work, and I believe in that truly. And a lot of people, it's funny, I went to America recently and filmed with a cameraman there who used to be an Australian, and he's got citizenship, and he said, see how many people work on iFish? 30? And I nearly broke into laughter. I own iFish TV with my business partner who owns Dream Pool Productions, and we literally do the work of 30 people with 4 people, because you can't make money. Anyone who owns a business knows you can't make money unless your overheads are low and you work hard. And that's probably the toughest thing. We literally work 7 days a week. I say 24 hours a day. Obviously, that's a lie because I sleep, but it never stops. Just trying to cook dinner tonight. I was trying to contact you to do this interview. I'm trying to put a comp up on Facebook, and Facebook is down, believe it or not. I've got a competition happening on the television show, which I'm putting together at the moment. Like today would have been 200 phone calls. So people see the big fish, the happy smiles. They don't see the midnight flight that lands at 6, you haven't slept all night, then you lug your bags 3 hours through the middle of some third world country, the middle of get on a boat, and then you've got to film all day. They don't see the biggest day they're done filming, 21 hours from go to woe.
Wow.
That's a big day no matter what you're doing. And then I got home at like 2 in the morning and the guy said, right, we're leaving at 4 to do it again tomorrow. And I said, and that's the sort of thing people don't see. You see the half hour of television and go, oh, that was pretty cool. But we do work very harder, like saying that, because a lot of people have jobs that suck way more than mine. But yes, there is a dark side, so to speak. But I always say the good times and the bad times are inversely proportional. When it's amazing, it's amazing. When it's tough, it's really tough. But they outweigh each other and they balance up in the end. And in the end, it is the most incredible job you could ever do because you get to do what you love. And even more importantly, you get to share it with people. And I reckon that's so cool.
Have you ever Googled yourself, Paul? Have you ever...
Yes, okay. 100%.
Okay, can I ask you this question? You've Googled yourself. Have you been happy with what you've read?
The reason I've Googled myself is to actually see what's there. And also because I'm pretty big on social media, Facebook, Twitter, etc., I'm just trying to keep a bit of an eye. And I've read some stuff on Google that is just disgusting, untrue, horrible, and also on Facebook and Twitter. It happened last night. I was Googling something other than me, and it came up with this feed on me, and it was just lies and stuff. And I read it. It was from 2010, and I just have to remind myself that the people writing this stuff, they are ignorant. And they don't understand, because if they did, they wouldn't write it. And if they really, I've got 136,000 Facebook fans, and the way I look at it, if 1% are crazy, that's a lot of people. That's 1,360 nutters.
Yeah.
And you know what? And if they want, let's say 1% of 1%. So let's take 1% of that. You've got 13.6 people who are absolute nutters. So you've got to expect to cop it. And you put yourself out there, and I do, I'm happy to cop it, but I've got to say what hurts the most, and I'll tell you right now, I've had people send me, see, people think, oh, it's Paul Worstling, he's like, he's not real, he can't touch him, so I'll send an email to iFish TV, he'll never see it. I don't mind telling you right now, I've had people send emails the minute the show finished that said, Paul, you're, and I can't say the word, your son's retarded, and your wife's an ugly, beep, beep, beep.
Goodness me.
Yeah, like nasty, horrible. And you know what? It hurts. But it hurts me more for them, not for me. I've got thick skin, and I've learned over the years, some people just say silly things. So that's the way it is. But you've got to put that aside. You've got to take that for what it is. And you've got to remember that I've got kids who are terminally ill who I take fishing, and it gives them, like, it gives them a lift. And if you put things in perspective, what does it matter what some nobody writes about crap when you physically are making the difference? I went and visited a young boy recently who had a heart transplant. And when I left, I got an email a week later, said his health's improved. He's just feel like, so really, perspective, it's water for duck's back, and you're just going to have a thick skin. Sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me.
Good on you, mate. All right, let's have some fun before we finish off. Are you ready? We're going to call this the... I don't even know what I'm going to call it. Name the scientific name for a fish. How's that sound?
Oh, this fish.
Now, you're a smart bugger. You've been the duck of your school. I've read this somewhere on Wikipedia somewhere. You're a smart bugger.
You have done your research.
You're a smart bugger, and you know stuff. And I've seen some episodes where you've pulled up a fish and you've started rattling off the scientific name. Now, I'm going to...
Hang on. Do me a favour.
Yep.
Only ask me the ones I know.
Oh, you should know these ones. I think you should know these ones. And there's no cheating, Paul, so get off Wikipedia right now. Are you ready for it?
I'm in.
Are you in Wikipedia or are you in...
No, I'm ready to rock it.
Okay.
I'm not too good with computers, good with fish.
Six fish. All right, we'll see how you go. Zebra fish. What's the scientific name for a zebra fish?
I hold the state record for the AAA Anglers Association, and I have no idea. Next.
The zebra fish is the Danio Rebrio.
No idea.
Okay.
But I can tell you the Australian Anglers Association Victorian record is 961 grams caught at Flinders on a pippy on a paternoster rig by Paul Worsley.
Okay.
Carry on.
Murray cod.
Oh, yes, it's Makalakalapili.
That's the one. Well done. One out of two. Well done.
And it's because it was first caught in that region, in that river, and I think Makalakala or Pili Pili was the scientist that named it.
Well done. All right. Four more. Atlantic salmon.
Oh, I've got no idea. It's got to have a salmono in it, though.
Yeah, you're right. Salmono salar.
I get half points.
Okay, Okay, so you got 1.5. Okay. Now, you should get this. If you don't get this, I'll be really disappointed. A Mako shark.
Xeris oxyrhynchus.
Well done.
Also known as blue dynamite.
Yep, okay. All right. Are you ready for this? Samson fish.
Yep. Cereoli hippos.
Yes, well done.
And its closest cousin is the yellowtail kingfish, Cereoli lalandi.
Okay, now you're sure you don't have like a poster of fish on your wall with scientific names?
I can't type that fast, and I promise you, if I did, I would have told you the zebrafish.
Okay, all right. Last one. Rainbow trout.
Oxyrhynchus micus.
That's the one. Well done. All right. Paul, do you want to...
I reckon that's a cracker because that's very cute, the old micus.
Okay. Look, I believe you. All right. Do you want to leave our listeners with a bit of Paul Worsling wisdom?
If I was wise, I'd be more than happy to. But the only thing I would leave people with who want to be inspired is if you do what you love... you'll always love what you do, and it'll never feel like you ever work a day in your life. And when I was 5 years of age, I'll never forget, I stood under the washing line as my mum hung stuff on the line, and my dad was a builder and he worked 7 days a week and probably never got the just reward for his efforts. I said, "Dad works hard, Mum." She said, "Well, the key when you grow up is to find a job you love." And I said, "Mum, seriously, that's impossible. How can work be fun?" Well, you know what? It can be. And if you want to do it, the time to do it is to start tomorrow. And that doesn't mean chuck your job in that you don't like and go into something else, but start something on the side, work part-time and build it and work on your hobby until it becomes a career. And when it pays the bills, I can guarantee you'll be a very happy man or a very happy woman.
Paul Worsling, you're a great sport, all-round good guy. Thanks for spending time with Steve Scotland on Hot Chocolate Recruitment's podcast, interviewing, and I now confirm, an extraordinary person with an extraordinary job.
Thank you very much, mate.
Thanks, mate.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Paul Worsling, the presenter of the very popular iFish program on TV and owner of Tackle World Cranbourne in Victoria, Australia. Paul just kept on giving and giving and giving. Like I said, just raw honesty. We went pretty personal and pretty deep there in some of those questions. And I'll be forever grateful for Paul to enable me to interview him and to share his story. He doesn't know me. I'm a complete stranger. And for that, I'll be eternally grateful. If you want to check out and learn a bit more about Paul, jump on ifishtv.com.au. That's enough from me for this week. I hope you enjoyed that podcast with Mr. Paul Worsling. Like I said, I loved it, and I hope to have your ears, I guess, in the next episode of the Hot Chocolate Recruitment Podcast, where we are interviewing ordinary people with extraordinary jobs.
Welcome to the Hot Chocolate Recruitment Podcast, the Hot Chocolate Recruitment Podcast.